From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today, we have the latest installment of our serial investigation, American Rehab. We're dedicating 6 weeks of Reveal to tell you the story of how Americans seeking treatment for drug addiction have gotten pulled into a form of rehab that puts them to work without any pay. Reveal's Shoshana Walter has been investigating this story for years.
And a few years ago, I came across Senecor, a rehab with locations in Texas and Louisiana. It's one of the bigger work-based rehabs I found.
Senecor is a spinoff of Synanon, that culty, ingenious, and abusive organization that died in our last chapter.
A spinoff that's unique in that it has kept going, mostly the same, for decades. The same work therapy I heard about from Tim Rowe back in Chapter 1.
I was told that you would help me find a job. I wasn't told that I'd be just thrown into a van and hauled off to some job and be told that I like it or not. I have to do it.
Wow, Tim.
All they do is just work the dog out of you and you don't get paid.
The same kind of weird punishments.
The verbal chair. That's where I would sit with my hands on my knees and I'd have to stare straight ahead.
Now, some of it seems to echo Synanon, but some of it is a mystery.
And the question I had was, who launched Senecor? Who was the person that started something so strong it could last for more than 50 years? On the Senecor website, it says the first Senecor chapter was founded inside a state penitentiary in Cannon City, Colorado. The description is short. Inmates gathered together to discuss their issues with drugs and alcohol. There's no mention of a founder.
So whoever organized this first Senecor chapter is written out of the organization's history.
I did learn the founder's name. James Lucas Austin. He went by Luke. Once I found out that Luke ran Senecor for a decade, it seemed even stranger that his name had been left out. It was Luke's vision that would end up sending thousands and thousands of people to work when what they really needed was addiction treatment.
Our colleague, Laura Starcheski, loves digging way back into the past, following the trail left behind by old documents and photographs. So we sent Laura to find out who Luke Austin was. We begin in a Colorado prison in 1967, the birthplace of Senecor. Here's Laura with Chapter 4 of American Rehab, Cowboy Con Man.
When he got the idea to start Senecor, Luke Austin was a wayward country singer stuck doing time in the state penitentiary. In better days, he'd toured with Johnny Cash and played at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. That's what I picked up by reading grainy newspaper accounts about Senecor anyway, which was the first thing I tried. Luke told the papers his idea was to start his own Synanon chapter, but the warden said no. Synanon already had a bit of a bad name, so Luke changed it to a word he made up. Senecor, for the center of the core of the person, that innermost part of us all, the soul, the part that Luke and Senecor could fix.
It's getting harder and harder to raise money because of the economic problems that we're having in the country. And being a former country western artist myself, I decided to go into this and try and raise some money for Senecor. This is what we're doing.
This is the one recording I've been able to find of Luke talking about Senecor. It's from a Houston local TV broadcast, a little spot about the Senecor band from 1974. In one shot, there's this huge tour bus with Luke Austin and Country Kingdom USA painted on the side. In a room inside a Senecor building, a few band members fiddle with their instruments. Luke talks to the camera with a cigarette burning down in one beefy hand. He's wearing a silver chain around his wrist and a chunky turquoise ring. He's a big man with even bigger lapels on his brown suit jacket. He's got beady blue eyes, red hair slicked back, and fluffy sideburns.
We have an album out now. We have a single that's being released today. And we're playing out at Dancetown, USA, on Sunday, December 8th. The tickets are $2.50 a piece, and we hope everybody comes because they're going to have a good show.
And yes, I found the record.
and my folks were the only ones to live 4 miles around.
This song is called Louisiana Swamp Man. Luke wrote the song, and that's him singing it.
When I was grown to 19 years, I chanced to go to town. Got in a fight with a gator man, and Lord, I brought him down.
The lyrics tell the story of a young outlaw, desperate to escape the swamp, but destined to die there, a wanted man.
The bayou fever's ending bones, the swamps will be my grave.
The next thing I did was request Luke's prison records. The Colorado State Archive sent me 2 pages scanned from an old logbook. Luke had been convicted of assault with a deadly weapon in 1966. That's why he was in prison, serving a 1 to 2 year sentence. The logbook said Luke was born in October 1932 in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Okay, so not a Louisiana swamp man. His occupation was listed as musician. And the more I've read, the more versions of Luke Austin I would find. He told one newspaper he got the idea for Senecor because he had heard about Synanon. He told another one, actually, he was a member of Synanon for a little bit. Then he said he lived at Synanon for 3.5 years out in California. In one account, he said he had a drug problem, that he'd been using pills in prison. In the next, he claimed he'd never actually used drugs himself. I spent months digging into Luke's backstory. I read more old newspapers, I requested records from other states, I called up early Senecor members, I even put in a records request with the FBI to try to get beyond the legend of Luke Austin and discover the true origin story. Here's what I found. Luke Austin was actually born in Keene, New Hampshire. So he was a New Englander, not a Southerner. Luke was born on October 7th, 1931. I mention the day because in some of the records I found, he tweaked the day or the year. His real name was James Sanborn Thompson Jr. So Luke's birthday was a fake, his hometown was a lie, his name was an alias. Next, his criminal record. I got prison records from Colorado, Nevada, and Massachusetts. Luke started serving time when he was 18 years old. He was sent to a military prison camp for stealing cigarettes and beer when he was a private in the Air Force. He was dishonorably discharged. He was arrested 8 times by the time he was 21, mostly for drunkenness over and over and stealing a truck once. And he was pretty much continuously in prison for the next 20 years. As I pieced together charge after charge, crime after crime, prison after prison, I saw a pattern. First, Luke was always begging for a guitar in letters he wrote to prison officials. I had an actor read a few excerpts.
August 2nd, 1952. Deputy Superintendent, Mr. J.J. Dacey, Norfolk, Massachusetts. Dear sir, I know you may get angry at me, but if you understood how I feel, that I know you'd see your way clear to let me have the one thing that is almost a part of me, my guitar. I've prayed night after night for the Lord to let you see your way clear to let me have it. I am a good guitarist. I am not a beginner. Please do this one thing for me.
April 5th, 1962. Captain Orville Jackson, Senior Captain. Sir, I thought perhaps I might be able to explain a few things in writing better than talking with you. I believe you know and understand how much I want to be able to play guitar again, and how much it means to me. The fact that because I've been in trouble so much is the reason I never became a big success. All in all, I've made a mess of my life, completely.
The second thing I noticed in the records? Work. At state and federal prisons, inmates like Luke had been made to work for decades. unpaid prison labor is a long-standing American practice. And after the Civil War, when slavery was abolished, the federal government made one exception: work as a punishment for people convicted of a crime. Across the South, states exploited the loophole to force recently freed Black Americans right back into involuntary servitude, effectively extending slavery. Inmates were forced to farm on plantations. They were leased out to private companies to work on railroads and in mines. The government later tried to sell prison labor as a reform effort, as you can hear in this film from 1935.
Hard, honest work is usually the most potent force in the reformation and rehabilitation of the prisoner. He must learn a respectable trade or vocation and be taught to earn his bread by the sweat of his brow.
While he was an inmate, Luke worked in a prison kitchen. He worked in a prison concrete plant. He worked in a prison mill, in a boiler room, on a farm.
City boys who wish to learn trades get their lessons on actual construction. To teach the prisoner real habits of industry so he will be able to keep pace with his fellow men when he leaves prison, he must have a hand in the production of useful articles and commodities.
Luke could get violent when he was angry, inside prison and when he was out. But he didn't seriously hurt anyone until the summer of 1961. One night in Las Vegas, after drinking two quarts of gin with some friends and his girlfriend, Luke thought he saw one of the friends embracing her. According to prison records, he stabbed his girlfriend once in the shoulder, and then he stabbed the man to death. Luke got a sentence of 10 years to life in the Nevada State Prison.
Floated up from my unconscious mind to my conscious mind. It was about Luke.
It was in that prison where Luke met our old friend Candy Latson, one of the original members of Synanon.
God damn, I ain't thought about that boy in years. And I could see him with cowboy boots on, jeans, red hair, guitar.
Candy had been invited into the Nevada State Prison to start a Synanon chapter for inmates.
The first time Candy Latson saw the inside of a jail, he was 19 years old and hopelessly addicted to narcotics. Now 29, Latson hasn't taken so much as aspirin since joining Synanon 6 years ago. He is now a regular and welcome visitor at Nevada State Prison. He carries with him into these cell blocks an idea that crime, like dope, is an addiction, and that both are an addiction to stupidity.
CBS News' Charles Kuralt covered this new idea, that Synanon could help people who use drugs and people who committed crimes. Kuralt interviewed Candy on his show, The 20th Century.
Well, these things that you discuss in the prison aren't really the kind of things inmates usually talk about, are they? How do you get through to them? How do you make them talk about things they never talked about before?
Most guys in prison, they kind of got an image, you know. You know, I've done time, a couple of times, and I've been arrested about 30 times, and they know me and I know them. The same little, you know, walk and talk that they do in jail was the same walk and talk I did while I was in jail. And we relate more as human beings. Like, I don't have no...
That's where Luke became a member of Synanon, not out in California, but inside a prison.
Would you please tell me what is the Synanon game?
It was Candy who taught Luke how to play the game, that group therapy born at Synanon, where participants sit in a circle and verbally attack each other.
And I'll tell it to you like this. At Synanon, they say you're as sick as your secrets. So you're trying to pop that secret. It's like a bug. You're trying to pop that poison out of there. Drain some of it off.
With Candy as his teacher, Luke soaked in all the behavior modification techniques that Synanon used. And inside that prison, just as he was supposed to be using the rules and tools of Synanon, working to confront his past, his drinking, the murder he'd committed, Luke started to weave a new persona. He claimed he'd been friends with Elvis Presley, And in 1961, he wrote a letter to a gossip magazine called Screen Stars, asking for help from his old friend Elvis. This time he explained he was a musician from Tennessee. He said he'd met Elvis in Memphis. Luke wrote,
"I've had to go through hurt, longing, disappointments, tragedy, and finally prison to really be free. I've found something, more than a new way of life. It's something greater that I can't even explain. I know that with God's help, I've been molded into a man with something worthwhile in life to really strive for. I'm going to come out of here and make the long climb back."
In 1964, just 3 years into his possible life sentence for stabbing a man to death, Luke was released from prison. But he didn't make the long climb back just yet.
That's Reveal's Laura Starcheski. Laura continues to follow Luke's path to Senecor. Next stop, the country music bars of Denver, where he meets Pauline, a woman who is about to see his dark side.
I honestly had an out-of-body experience because I was up above and looking down. I don't know how this happened, but it's the truth.
That's coming up next on American Rehab from Reveal.
Reveal is supported by LegalZoom. For more than 19 years, LegalZoom has been dedicated to helping Americans with legal challenges. You can start online, and their network of attorneys can provide you with advice. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information.